This week has been like a really stressful week for me. Like yesterday I was applying for my UK visa. So it has been like a lot of paperwork and a lot of things. Yesterday, in fact, I was like submitting 1.5 kilograms of papers. And so it was like a ton of things. But I was remember like when I was applying for my first visa, and I remember my wife had to return to the UK and I was in queue and I was sitting, waiting for a call. So I remember that I spent 9 to 5 every single day sitting in front of the phone number, in front of the phone, and I pick up to check if the phone was working. I was all the time checking. I did not go anywhere, and I was only thinking about the call. I was thinking about this call, which eventually changed my life, was going to change everything. Today we are going to be talking, and today we are going to be trying to learn about a person who received a call, but it was not like my call, a call for a visa, or a call that you are now in the second team, you are back into the first team, and you are playing. We are going to be talking about the call of Jesus Christ. Matthew 9:9 say, as Jesus passed on from, he saw a man called Matthew sitting at the tax booth, and he said to him, follow me. And he rose and followed him. When we read the verse 9 of Matthew, we say it's really clear, it's evident what is happening, but we get like a little bit lost because normally, and I study an engineering, so normally when I was lost in an exam, when I did not know a clue, the first thing it was to ask the lecturer, there is more data. I think there is something missing to get the answer. And so when you read the verse 9, you have that feeling that is probably something missing. Matthew was a tax collector. What does that mean in society? As you know, in every society, there is like good jobs and not so good jobs. Let's say that a tax collector in Jewish society, first century, was the worst possible job on earth. Because politically, as you know, the Israel was dominated by the Roman Empire, so they were dominated by a different force. They were a colony, and so tax collectors were working for the Roman Empire, and so politically, they were not nationals, so they were working for somebody else. Socially, because the government gave them the freedom to tax almost everything, most of the tax collectors take the freedom to tax everything a little bit more. So they were taking like a little bit more. And so if you have to tax somebody for like, you produce 3 pieces of bread and I have to tax you 1, let's go and tax you 2. And that will be better for me. And so tax collectors were accumulating a lot of money, a lot of things. And the rest of society was really poor. So how you are going to like somebody who is stealing from you? But most importantly, religiously, Jews have a group of set of rules that they had to follow. There was something that they need to follow in order to be with God. So tax collectors were working for a pagan group of people. They were selling themselves to people who were not part of the group of God. And so they were qualified as impure. Impure is not a big thing here. For example, if you try to figure out what is to be clean or what is to be unclean, normally when you are small, your mom or dad tell you when you are going to be eating, you need to wash your hands before you eat, or you need to have a shower once a day. Some of the boys that I don't want to mention in the youth weekend have that completely wrong. For them, being clean or unclean was completely different. So when you open some of the rooms, you need to close it immediately. And so it was like no translation, no subtitles needed. It was awful. It was like that deep and dense smell. So for me, being clean is something. For Jordan, it's something completely different. And so it's something that we have to be, but in our nowadays culture, being clean and unclean is more like in the ordinary things. In the time of Jesus, being clean and unclean was extremely important, was vital for human nature. Being clean meant then you have access to God. Being clean means that you could go and see God and receive forgiveness for your sin. So Matthew, as an unclean person, Matthew, as an impure person, he did not have any access to God. He did not have the right to even go into the presence of God. And if you were into the presence of God being impure, the consequences were lethal. That was too dumb. Lights out, you were in. And so that is the amazing thing when we read in verse 9, and Jesus came and called Matthew. That is groundbreaking. That is the most amazing thing ever, because how God is going to be approaching somebody who is completely impure, how God is going to be approaching and telling somebody who doesn't deserve, come and follow me. Matthew did not deserve that. Matthew was not even in the plan of anybody else. But God decided, come and follow me. That is the beginning. That is only the beginning. And we see that Matthew just stand up and follow him. There is something, and when I was reading some of the book and some of the commentaries, there is like one of the scholars get to a conclusion, and it was really good. He said, there is like three signs that Matthew made the decision completely to follow God. First sign, he stand up and follow him. He say that the faith need to be determined by actions. We cannot just be impassive. We cannot be inactive. Faith has to be active. Matthew made the first step. Jesus say, follow me, and he stand up and start following Jesus. I love USC, and the boys know that, and normally we try to do like a challenge and fighting. When you are going to watch boxing, or when you are going to watch a fight, this is the thing that happens in every single show. You go like a highlight of the first fighter, and there is an interview with the guy, and the guy is saying, I am the most amazing martial artist in human history. I am going to go and attack my opponent. I am going to destroy it in the first round. I am the strongest man on the planet. And these people like talking and talking about themselves. I'm building this statue. And so you see the highlights of the people just fighting and doing things. And it's everything about themselves. There is a difference with Matthew. In Luke and Mark, there is like a quote when he said that Matthew was going to follow Jesus. They say Matthew left everything behind. Matthew doesn't mention that. Matthew doesn't even go and try to explain what I am doing or what he is not doing. He focused the whole attention in Jesus. And I love the Matthew's example and Matthew's gospel, because he doesn't tell anything about himself. The only thing that Matthew mentioned is that he was the lowest in Jewish society. And he decided to go and follow Jesus Christ. Normally, when people try to do things, they point in themselves. But as Paul say in Philippians 3, verse 8, indeed, I count everything as a loss because of surpassing the worth of knowing Christ Jesus my Lord. For his sake, I have suffered the loss of all things, I count them as rubbish, in order that I might gain Christ. MacArthur, when he is commenting into this passage, say that far from being depressing, far from being sad and lost about everything that he was leaving behind, Matthew was in full joy. He lost a career, but gained a destiny. Lost his material possessions, but gained an spiritual fortune. Lost his temporal security, but gained eternal life. Just a parenthesis, especially because we are in a youth program for the young people. Normally, when you hear a testimony, when you hear somebody that he's deciding to follow Christ, the normal status of the whole testimony is people start telling you everything that they have done, everything that they have tried, and they found empty. And they found that the only thing that they needed is Jesus Christ. And I was thinking when I was preparing the sermon, normally when you hear that, you say, well, but the guy at least tried something. So let me try something. And I found extremely difficult, and it's more difficult for the young people to decide to follow Christ because they haven't tried anything. They haven't go out of the wide world and see what is happening and discover that Jesus is the best thing. And it's really amazing because you need to focus today in the faith. You are giving up, not anything behind, but you are giving up the things that you believe the world is going to give you. And my only advice, the thing that I can tell you, is like, don't try anything. Don't try to go out of the church. Don't try to experiment. There is nothing outside that you can experiment. And in Cuba, we use a phrase that is nobody learn from an outsider example. And please break that rule. Learn from the sample of the mature Christian in the church. Learn from your brothers and sisters. And don't try anything. Do like Matthew. Without any question, without any doubt, without any second of, oh, Jesus, give me a chance. I need to try this first. He just stand up and follow him. The third sign is what we are reading in the following verses. Matthew arranged to have his friend to meet Jesus and communicate with them the gospel. When we were reading in the Bible, in the first 9 verses of Matthew 9, we see that there is a group of friends who is bringing a paralyzed man. This group of friends knew that Jesus was the key, knew that Jesus was the answer, and so they decide, I am going to be bringing my friend who has this problem, my friend who is paralyzed, to meet Jesus, because Jesus is the best person and the only possible answer for my friend. Matthew is doing different, but you see the connection. He decides, I am going to bring all my friends and I am going to invite them to a feast with Jesus. The equivalent that I notice in this culture about the feast is like weddings. In Cuba, weddings are not a big thing. Normally when you go to a wedding, between the ceremony and the reception is a couple of hours. And in the reception, they give you something like really small, which is called cajita. So in this wee box, you receive like a small piece of cake, a cold salad, and a croquette. If the people who are giving the reception are really powerful and they want to show you something like amazing, you will get 2 croquettes. That's you, nothing else. I remember the first time that I was here and my wife told me, like, we are inviting to a wedding. And I say, okay, happy days. At what time does this is going to start? Like I say, no, it's going to start around like 12, midday. And I was thinking, 12, midday, 2 o'clock, we are out, we can eat something. And say, no, and then we just go and the couple is starting to take pictures at that time, and then you go to the reception. And I say, okay, at what time the reception start? No, 4 o'clock, okay. And then people came at night time, and you have the party, and everything will finish about midnight. And I was counting with my fingers, say, 12 hours. How am I going to survive with 2 croquettes? 12 hours with 2 croquettes? This is going to be mental. What a surprise. The wedding finished, you came, there was like a lovely old people giving you tea, biscuits, chop bread, that type of thing. And I say, let me just eat all the chop bread that I can, because then it's the 2 croquettes. So then we went to the reception, and you have a 3-course meal. And you are like, I think I prefer this type of weddings than the Cubans one. Then people came at nighttime, and there is like more food coming on, because the people who didn't were not in the reception, so there is like burgers, this type of thing. I was like, oh, happy days. The only problem was when they turned out the music and the dance floor was open, nobody was there. Too much food to go and dance, but it was okay. I imagine that Matthew was inviting Jesus to a Northern Ireland wedding, not a Cuban wedding, not to croquettes or tree. It was really good. So we see Jesus is in a reclining seat. That means that Jesus was the guest of honor. Jesus was the main figure in this banquet, in this feast. But what happened? Let's go and read. And Jesus reclined at the table in the house. Behold, many tax collectors and sinners came, and they were reclining with Jesus and his disciples. And when the Pharisees saw this, they said to his disciples, "Why does your teacher eat with tax collectors and sinners?" But when he heard this, he said, "Those who are well have no need of a physician, but those who are sick. Go and learn. I desire mercy, not sacrifice." The thing that I love in the Bible, and when you are reading the Gospels, every time that Jesus or the disciples are having fun, every time that Jesus and the disciples are having a good moment, who show off? The Pharisees. When I was growing up, and when I was reading the Bible for the first time, I say every time that the Pharisees are there, they just are trying to just annoy the whole situation. The thing with the Pharisees, and it's sometimes we are not completely fair with the Pharisees. The thing is like, we forget, and there is 500 years that nothing happens in the Bible, and you get lost. And so you see the people of Israel returning from captivity, and then you arrive to the New Testament, and you go like the Pharisees, and there is like three groups. I am going to try to put this in perspective. Imagine then you go for a nap, and you end up having like a really long nap, let's say a Spanish siesta, 550 years of a siesta. So that means making some calculations and going back, I'm going to use my numbers. That means if you went to bed in 1468 and you wake up in 2018, that is the equivalent of what happened Malachi to Matthew. So you lost a lot of things in the middle. So let's go and do a little bit of background. You got the Pharisees. The Pharisees, although they were not as political powerful as they have been in generations, they remained influential in New Testament culture. They were reputed by the piety and the knowledge of the law. They were the teachers of Jews, and the whole point and goal of the Pharisees were to be holy, to be separated, to be able and be completely clean, to know Jesus Christ and enter into Jesus Christ. As we were saying previously, being pure was a big thing in this culture, so they were the cleanest person in Jewish society. When you read that, you say, the Pharisees were not too bad. They were just trying to do something good. They were trying to be pure. They were trying to just get in communication with God. Well, the thing with that is like, it was not quite right. Their methodology was not the best. They were trying and promoting an elitist religion. They were making exceptions of person. They were just trying to do everything for themselves. They were trying to make their way into heaven. They lost a little bit of the plot because they thought that you could earn your way into Christ. They thought that you could earn your way to see Jesus and be with him. And that is the main problem. The main problem is like, you cannot make your way. And I love a wee discussion and argument. So normally when the boys are playing FIFA, I am normally sitting there laughing and bringing more fire to the thing. And so if somebody is not playing quite well, I sometimes let them know that. Sorry, some parents, if your boy came to the house saying that I was not quite nice. I was just having fun with them, even if they don't get it, but it was good. So, but Jesus was not having fun with the Pharisees, but he made two things, and they are extremely clever. First, he quote the Bible, and he quotes from Hosea 6:6, and he say, "I want you to show love nor offer sacrifices. I want you to know me more than I want to burn offerings." And then he quotes something. The Pharisees used to use this phrase when they were like telling to somebody that they were not clever enough. They used to say to them, "Go and learn. You go and learn and then return to me." So Jesus quotes the Bible and say today, go and learn. Go and learn what it actually means to be following me. Go and learn what it actually means to be with me. There is two things that are really important. There is two things that I would like to be and point and highlight and putting in black and making like an exclamation mark today. One, if you haven't followed Christ, God is calling you to follow him. Second, if you have followed Christ and you are deciding to be a disciple of Christ, you need to take something in mind. Don't make the same mistake. We cannot make the same mistake like the Pharisees. It's not about us. It's not about what I can do and how amazing I can be or how much you are reading the Bible or you are learning or how many verses you have learned. It's not about what you can do, but what it has been done for you. Christianity is no angelic religion. Christianity is not about only the people who are inside the church. Christianity is not about the chosen ones. Christianity is for everyone, everybody. And the most important thing is like, it's about the chosen one. The problem is like everybody chosen. God has chose everybody. For example, if you have an item and the item A costs £10 and you have a complete different item and let's say the item B, but the item B costs £10 too, you can say like A and B have the same value. You can say that for the shop, they have the same value. When you buy or sell that, it's the same thing. My value is on the cross of Calvary. My value is on Jesus Christ dying for me. Your value is on the cross of Calvary because Jesus Christ came and died for you too. That means that all of us have the same value in front of the eyes of God. That means that when God was calling Matthew and saying, follow me, it did not matter that he was impure. It did not matter that he was no part of society. It did not matter that nobody wanted to speak with him. God called him because he had the same value than me. I know that schools are sometimes awful places to be, and some people are really abusing, and some of our kids and girls receive abuse and they are bullying in school, and sometimes you get value because of the grades that you get, or if you are in a grammar school, or if you go to Sullivan, you are really clever. If you go to the academy, you are not as clever, and you get like God in this, like some people are better than others. I am afraid that even if you think that you are beautiful, that you are really good, you have the same value. The same value. If somebody is telling you that you don't have any value, if somebody is telling you that you don't deserve anything, please close your eyes, look at the cross of Calvary, and think, God has died for me. God gave me the value that I need. God gave the ultimate sacrifice for me. That is the value. That is what we need to do and share. If you are failing and finally you arrive to the church, you find a place, you find a family, and sometimes we make this mistake because we are humans, and sometimes when we find something like really good, we start speaking quiet. We don't want anybody to know. Please, you find the best thing ever, go and speak out. Go and tell everybody what you have found, because that is the amazing thing. If you feel afraid, if you don't think that you can do that, and sometimes we have tasks that are really difficult, if you want to feel hope, your value was in the cross of Calvary, and your hope and strength is in the empty tomb on the Sunday night. Jesus paid the ultimate price, but Jesus also made the ultimate victory. He destroyed what we cannot destroy humanly. He destroyed death. Go and tell everybody about Jesus Christ. Go and share the gospel. If you fail, oh, I don't know if I can do it. We would love to encourage you. We would love to take you and help you to go forward. I have been going through a lot, and there is things that I never imagined that I was able to do. I remember that I put all my goals and all my desire in the thing that I could achieve humanly. So like 2.5 years ago, everything changed for me. I arrived here to a new country. My English is awful. Some people will say it's still awful, but it's okay. I couldn't figure out, and in the back of my mind was always the idea that this is temporal. And I didn't know what to do. I decided that I was going to follow Christ, that if God has decided that is the path for my life, I am not going to fight with Him anymore. I am going to decide to follow, and I am going to decide to trust in Him, because He is the only person that I can trust. He is the only person that I can do. Jesus said in Revelation 3:20, I am knocking at the door. If somebody is hearing my voice and open that door, I will come and I will sit and I will eat and I will be with them. Jesus is not only telling you, follow me, and He will forget about all of that. He is telling you, I want to be your friend. I want to be your father. I want to be your family. I want to be your country, your nationality, your language, your school, everything. I love to be like Matthew. No question raised. No excuses. Leave all behind and follow Him. Today, tonight, yesterday, tomorrow, He is telling you, follow me. I would love the answer would be like Isaiah, oh Lord, here I am, send me. God approached Matthew and said, follow me. He got up, was active. He left everything behind, and He invited all the friends, because this is the most amazing thing, and this is something that we need to share, we need to give, and we need to follow Him. God is telling today to you, follow me. The answer, I cannot provide it for you, but it's something that you have to do. The only thing that I can point out and finalize is the best thing that I have done in my whole life was to get up and follow Him. I hope that is going to be the best thing that you can do too. God bless.